Fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the October 26th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Tuesday's show is topped by a Ugandan female athlete nicknamed the Black Pearl. Patricia Apolot has been shining in recent years in the sport of kickboxing. The Black Pearl will celebrate her 31st birthday next week, and you might say she received an early birthday present over the weekend in Cairo, Egypt. That's where Apolot successfully defended her world title with a 10-round victory against Argentina's Andrea Salazar. Magume Davis Rakowinj caught up with the Black Pearl as she trained with other kickboxers. And Magume joins us now from Kampala, Uganda. Sporty Tuesday greetings, Magume.
Sporty Tuesday greetings to Tusani and our listeners. Ugandan kickboxer Patricia Apolot wears many hats at her home in Mutungo, a Kampala suburb. She's the head of the house, kickboxer, mentor and trainer for the budding kickboxers, males and females. With the challenges brought about by the COVID-19 pandemic, limiting the use of gyms and travel, she has turned her compound into a gym of sorts.
Come on! Go! Stop! Go! Right.
An improvised punching bag hangs on her door. Gloves and shields litter the balcony of her house. Today, she's concentrating not only on herself as she gets ready for the world title bout, but also helping other kickboxers to get in good shape ahead of World Kickboxing Championships. One of them is 17-year-old Edith Pedun. Edith says she used to be shy. I lacked some level of confidence until she started the game of kickboxing.
To be a girl, it's really not easy. You have to go through a lot. You have to experience a lot, but it takes courage to stand up for your country, to stand up for yourself, to show them that we are also coming up. Not just me saying that girls' work is in the kitchen, but even us ourselves, we can stand as women. I will manage it because it takes courage to stand. Though I'm still in the junior team, but I believe one time I'll also be a champion. I'll also stand for my country.
Indeed, in her debut international meet, Edith, 57 kgs, managed to kickbox for silver at the recent World Championships in Cairo, Egypt. Patricia is glad her dedication is paying off, and also that the sport she loves most is helping fight some bad cultural practices.
I'm grooming them. They found out that actually this sport can do you something. First of all, it gives you good health conditions, and it raises the awareness of a girl child not only thinking about marriage and also seeing beyond. Another thing is they looked at the way I travel. So they say that maybe one time, one day, when we join the sport, we can travel.
Another fighter training here is the experienced James Oora. James Oora, 59.9 kgs and a low kicker, says sparring with Patricia has made him become a better fighter in the ring and in the real life.
I've learned a lot from her. I've learned the speed. I've learned the move, the footworks. I've learned how the experience of like dodging a fighter. I've learned the ways how you can control your guard, like when you're in the ring. And I've learned how to study the opponent in the ring. She's a person who loves to see other fighters, at least also to be somewhere. She's a fighter who has been like working so hard at least to promote many up-and-coming or young talents.
He's been fighting since 2012, but he holds a lot of praise for Patricia's stamina.
When you're sparring with her, you don't feel like as if you're sparring with a woman. You feel like you're really fighting with your fellow man. Yeah, the power she has everything. She's a lioness.
James won silver at the championships. Patricia says James and other male kickboxers have helped her career to blossom, and says he's stealing the same streets, the upcoming female fighters.
They're actually like a driving force behind a lady. When you try to follow and engage with a man, it is different when you're engaging with a lady. And also the power of men inspiring is different from the power of female. So by the time you go to the ring, the impact of a punch of a lady is less compared to the man. So that getting you to be prepared ahead by 5 times than your opponent. So for that, that's why you see when these guys, I'm grooming them the same way I was groomed. Prepare with male sex, then groom them on that same area where I was groomed, and then put them out there.
The black pearl, the lioness, as she's sometimes called, says she's relieved, successfully defend her world belt. She won some 6 years ago and remains undisputed champion in the super light category, earning herself number one rankings in the world. But she showers respect for the budding kickboxers.
The performance of the team surprised me myself as we came here. You know, the players were very prepared of other countries, and they have been performing in and out every month, twice, after 2 months. But our team also did the best they could, and they won the titles. They won the medals, silver, bronze, and golds. In MMA, in full contact, and in low kick. And it has given exposure to Uganda as a country and as players to see and to reach beyond that we can ever reach.
Overall, Uganda managed to win 3 golds, 4 silvers, and 2 bronze, a total haul of 9 medals at the World Kickboxing Championships that climaxed in Cairo this past weekend. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Go back. Go, go. Again. Go. Go. And that is it. Go. Step in with the right.
Hello, listeners. My name is Apolotu Patricia. I'm a world kickboxing champion, intercontinental champion, African champion, and international champion. And you are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
And thanks to Mugume Davis Rwakarinji for that spicy, hard-hitting feature on Patricia Apolot, the Black Pearl. In a related story, Mugume reports the International Boxing Federation has donated $6,000 worth of equipment for the development of the sport in Uganda. The Uganda Boxing Federation says the gear includes boxing pads, gloves, punching bags, and body and head protectors.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we're looking at the impact of COVID-19 restrictions on air travel across the continent. As countries open their skies again and travelers board planes, where do African countries stand on vaccine passports? Join me, Haley Adams, on the next Straight Talk Africa. This Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm VOA Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In African men's football, a 21-year-old Ghanaian player is facing some early career frustrations. Joining us now from Accra with that story is Yao Afusu Larbi. Sporty greetings, Yao.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. In 2017, Eric Aya was on top of the world. He led the Ghana under-17 team to the finals of the CAF under-17 tournament early that year in Gabon, scoring 4 goals in the process. He then followed that up with another sterling display, this time at the FIFA under-17 World Cup in India, where he scored 3 times in Ghana's run to the quarterfinals of the competition. For his efforts, 17-year-old Eyiah was nominated for the Confederation of African Football's Young Player of the Year award, which was eventually won by Zambia's Patson Daka, now at Premier League side Leicester City. That under 17 World Cup in India, eventually won by England, paraded an array of young talents, including Phil Foden and Ferran Torres of Manchester City, Callum Hudson-Odoi of Chelsea, and Jadon Sancho of Manchester United. But Eyiah was more highly rated. At that time, it was believed Ghana had unearthed another goal-scoring sensation to follow in the footsteps of the legendary Asamoah Gyan. Like many young footballers from Africa, Eyiah was eager to further his career in Europe, and agents from all around the world were circling. With Cristiano Ronaldo being a childhood role model, there was always going to be one winner when the famous agent Jorge Mendes showed up and offered to represent 17-year-old Eyiah.
Cristiano Ronaldo was one of my favorite players in the world. So I always followed him. Everything about Ronaldo, I think I know, you know. Yeah, so I have heard that Cristiano Ronaldo has such agents called George Mendes, you know, Jorge Mendes. As at that time, I know, though it was one of my dreams, I never thought, you know, though I was dreaming, but I never thought it would be so early for me.
Working with Mendes came with more than just getting the best deals with the best clubs. It also came with the quirks of mingling with global superstars and even a dinner with Cristiano Ronaldo.
We had dinner with Ronaldo, Marcelo, not even just dinner or something. Like me seeing Ronaldo like physical. Yo, bro, it's a privilege, you know. I feel like I'm dreaming, you know. I feel like I'm dreaming, but it's also encouraged me. You know, it's encouraged me to work hard, because now I'm close to Ronaldo. Now I'm working with George Mendes. So why can't I be a footballer?
On the field, Mendes negotiated a deal for Eyiah to join French Ligue 1 side AS Monaco in January 2018 at the expense of other clubs like English side Wolverhampton Wanderers. On paper, Monaco seemed like the ideal place to start for a youngster. After all, the club had just sold youngster Kylian Mbappe for a world record fee, and there was belief, at least within the players' camp, that Eyiah could be the next superstar. But a combination of poor results and a change of direction stalled any chance of Eyiah making the first team.
It was like this most of the time. I joined the first team. Maybe I trained with them 3 times a week. Yeah, so like this, and my second year, it gotten to a point, they don't push us again. Like, at that time, things were not good for Monaco. They were losing and all that. They were about to go to relegate and all that, you know. Things were difficult, though. So at that, my second year, they tried to sign players. Time they signed Fabregas and all that, you know, top players.
The former Ghana captain grew increasingly frustrated by the lack of first-team opportunities and confronted his agent, Jorge Mendes, about a loan.
I told George that I think I need to go to loan or something, you know. The second team, now Monaco don't promote, and the second team is now, the leg is down for me and all that, you know, and you know too. So I speak with him like this, and he said, I should have patience, things will change. Anytime I make a move or George speak to them, they will say they want me, they don't want me to go, I should stay and all that.
Despite assurances, the first-team opportunities never came. And nearly 4 years after joining Monaco, Eyiah, despite only being 21 years old, feels his progress has been curtailed at the French Principality Club and wants a new challenge.
They said they need me, but they need me back. They are not willing to promote me, and I'm still in the second team. In the second team, there is nothing here, you know. Like, the league is competitive, but I feel like, I have to play in the league or something like that, you know.
It is understandable that Eyiah feels a sense of frustration with his situation at Monaco. From that under-17 tournament in India, the likes of Phil Foden, Jadon Sancho and Callum Hudson-Odoi have gone on to become global stars at the same age, while Eyiah still wanders in the shadows of the Monaco Academy. Once considered one of the best young talents in world football, there's certainly still time for Eyiah to turn his career around. But for that to happen, quite a lot would need to change. For the sunny side of sports, this is Yao Fusilabi in Accra.
Thanks, Yao. Still with Ghana football, the country's national women's team, nicknamed the Black Queens, was eliminated by Nigeria Sunday in the qualifying competition for the 2022 Africa Women's Cup of Nations tournament in Morocco. Meanwhile, on the men's side, Ghana's national team, the Black Stars, has already qualified for next year's Africa Cup of Nations in Cameroon. And the Black Stars are in a tight race with South Africa in the qualifying competition for the 2022 FIFA World Cup in Qatar. The South Africans currently top their World Cup qualifying group with 10 points from 4 qualifiers. The Ghanaians have 9 points from 4 qualifiers. Each team has 2 qualifying matches left in November, and the winner of the group will advance to the final stage of African World Cup qualifying, a 10-team playoff in March 2022. Looking ahead to January and the Nations Cup tournament in Cameroon, the Black Stars of Ghana are grouped with Morocco, Comoros, and Gabon. The Black Stars are 4-time Nations Cup champions, but it's been almost 40 years, 1982, in fact, since the team lifted the trophy. Prince Nesta went out into the streets of Accra to sample some public reaction among Ghanaian football fans. And Prince joins us now. Sporty greetings, Prince.
Sporty greetings to you too, Sonny.
The Black Stars of Ghana have been drawn in Group C for the African Cup of Nations, scheduled to be played in Cameroon from January 9th to February 6th, 2022. The 2015 AFCON finalists have been paired with familiar foes, including the Atlas Lions of Morocco, Comoros, and the Panthers of Gabon. I took to the streets of Accra, Ghana, just to find out the locals' opinion in regards to the groups and their chances of winning the whole tournament.
With regards to our group, I think it's quite an easy one, if you ask me. The chance of us qualifying to the next stage is quite high, looking at the people we are drawn against. But hey, it's 2021, football has changed, so anything can happen. I mean, we should brace ourselves for surprises, but on paper, technically, I think we stand a chance against these teams.
I think we stand a chance because of Comoros and Gabon. Gabon has Aubameyang, though, but I mean, we still have a chance. I mean, it's 11 players that are playing, so Aubameyang, only Aubameyang can do the thing. But the point is, I feel Ghana has a chance of qualifying to the next stage, you know. But afterwards, I don't know, I can't be too sure. You know how we play at some point? Sometimes we lose our focus. So I'm just hoping, you know, that we can go far. But with the kind of teams that we're playing against, I think we stand a chance of going through. We could either be first or second. Yeah, I mean, with the form that the kind of players that Morocco has, I think they can come out first and then we will follow back. I mean, Comoros can score, Ghana, Gabon, highly unlikely. But, you know, I'm just hoping.
Yeah, my opinion is we wish Ghana all the best this time around so that we can even win the cup. It has been long for we to even have this cup, at least our parent goal, at least so that we can even win this cup for this time around. Our players can play good football and they can win it for us because it has been long, more than 20 years now.
What team do you think might trouble the boys?
Morocco will be very tough for us. Morocco will be very tough for us because they have a quality players. And we too have the same quality players, but if you compare Morocco, they are ahead of us in terms of the good players. And so we wish them the best. We wish them the best.
Obviously, as you can see, we are not well prepared. If you can see what's going on in our team, we don't have a strong team. We don't have a strong team to compete with the likes of Nigeria, Cameroon, Algeria. Yeah. Yeah, so that's what I said. We will do it. Obviously, we'll go further. But to bring the ultimate, it's really going to be tough. Serious.
You have to take care of the players and know the players that you are going to play with. And they should stop doing the bias and get the right players to play the match. That's my opinion. I think Morocco will be the challenge for us. But still, we will qualify. Still, we will beat them down. We have to stop the bias and know the right players for the game. See, because you can see they can just put a player. You know that this player is not able to be, he can't able to play for Ghana. But because of maybe the person's manager is part of the Blasters management, so they put him, which is not, it's not good, it's not fair. You can't do that in Europe. They don't do that in Europe. In Europe, they always try the small boys, they always give them chance. That's why every day the Europe are going far more than that.
I'll be supporting Nigeria and I wish them good luck.
It's a very tough group, but not all that tough as well. But Ghana needs to, I mean, be on their toes and, I mean, expect good results after each match. And Ghanaians, we are not scared at all. I'm a Ghanaian as well, and I believe in my people. So we hope for the best. And surely Ghana will lift up the cup, the trophy. And surely they will top up the group.
In this group, we have Gabon, we have Morocco, Comoros. Which team do you think might give them trouble a little bit?
Trouble? That's the Moroccans. Yeah, because Moroccans, they are very good. When it comes to the field of play, they are good, tactically good, and mentally good as well, as compared to the Ghanaians. The Ghanaians too are tactically good, and I mean, but we have the upper hand. We have the upper hand because this time we hope Ghanaians will make it to the top.
What will it take for them to win the whole thing?
I don't know about the telepathy in the team. I don't know how long these players have played together. That is a very big factor. And I don't know who our marksman is as we speak in the Ghanaian team, because these are quite new faces and new names in the whole selection. But I think we need that telepathy to be able to scale through, you know, all the way to the final. But let's hope for something good, something better.
What do you think it will take for the boys to win the whole thing?
That is what I think we don't have, you know, the collective spirit as a team. You know, that's what we don't have. That's what Italy used to win the European League, yeah. But we don't have that. If we can have that, we can win. But I doubt that we'll have that anyway. Wish them all the very best. You know, they should go and win for us, yeah.
Hard work. They don't have to joke. They have to play hard. Uh-huh. And at least they have a good teamwork. Teamwork too is among, at least they should have teamwork. This the Ghanaian team, they don't play in the same distinct clubs. Everyone have his own club that is playing. So if they come together like this, at least everyone will bring his talents. At least so that they will help each other so that they can win it.
I'm a Ghanaian, obviously, but we Ghanaians going for the ultimate, I don't think it's possible. Obviously, we'll go further, we'll do well. Yeah, and let's say semi-finals. But bringing the ultimate, no, I doubt, yeah.
Do you think Ghana can win it?
We're very glad to hear that. We just pray so. Ghana can win, we just pray so.
Okay, the chances depends on the coach and the players as well. Yeah, because we have confidence in our players, our foreign base, and both foreign and local. The chances are, I mean, they are very slight. Yeah, slight chances. We will make up to lift the trophy. Yeah.
What message do you have for the boys?
Okay, so we just want to tell them that we're supporting them, spirit, body, soul. We're behind them, and they should make us proud. As to whether we're going to win it, I'm still sitting on the fence on that. But we're behind them, solidly behind them. It's all the best.
They have to work hard. Only if they work hard, they can win. Oh, it will not be easy for them, but by determination and hard work, they'll win.
To the boys, they're going to be going out there. What would you like to tell them?
Yeah, obviously, we are going to give our maximum support to them. Yeah, we'll pray for them that they should go and do well. That's all I can say. They should go and do better. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy. If you look at our current team, it's not going to be easy to bring the ultimate.
The majority of sentiments from the street show grounds of optimism among the Blackstars supporters, who are consistently calling upon their team to pull up their socks and bring home the coveted trophy with the last one in 1982. Reporting for the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Prince Nestor.
Thanks, Prince. And pull up your socks, Black Stars. I'm Sunny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. I encourage our Sunny Side of Sports listeners to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. Once again, my Twitter handle, @VOA Sunny Sports.
Voice of America.
My Voice of America colleague Gwen Uten tells us Olympic pole vault champion Mondo Duplantis is ready to reach new heights. And that could include a second consecutive World Athletics Male Athlete of the Year award. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Mondo Duplantis is the current world record holder in the pole vault, both indoors and outdoors. And this summer, he added a gold medal to his growing list of achievements. And while the 21-year-old is literally setting the bar high, in August, he told Reuters News competing on the Olympic stage was an experience of a lifetime.
The Olympics is the biggest meet in track and field, and by far. And so it's the most important meet of my life to this point, and I guess it would be the most important meet maybe I'll ever have. And I'm coming in as the favorite. All the pressure was on me, and it was kind of one of these things to where if I wasn't to go in there and win, then it's kind of like almost embarrassing, because everybody's been talking to me about it for the past year since it got postponed and I just broke the world record. And so everybody, basically was just expecting me to go in there and win the gold. And, that's kind of tough because it's still sports and anything can happen, and you still have to go out there, you still have to do it.
Duplantis won his gold medal in Tokyo with a winning height of 6.02 meters. And as if the gold medal wasn't enough, that same night, he tried to make history by raising the bar to 6.19 meters, 1 centimeter above his own world record. And he came so close. He tried to clear the bar on 3 attempts, but it wasn't meant to be. However, Duplantis says don't count him out too soon.
The first attempt felt really good. It felt like I was over it. I thought I was going to be able to make it. I was actually surprised at how high I was over it in the beginning, because I never, got my feet and my hips that high over, a bar that high. I guess it's unfortunate that I wasn't able to make it, and that I brushed a little bit on the way down on my chest. But it's a huge confidence booster for the future, because I feel like I have a lot of higher heights in store now, and I feel like I can make 6.19, 6.20. I can get into the 20s range. So, it's a big confidence booster. And, it is one of those meets to where at the end of the day, I still did win the Olympic gold. So I couldn't really complain that much, even though I would love to break the world record. But, the jump itself was a huge confidence booster.
Duplantis' confidence in the sport began while growing up in the U.S. state of Louisiana. He was encouraged by his father, a former pole vaulter from New Orleans and 2-time state champion. As a youth, Duplantis spent many summers in his mother's native country, Sweden, and chose to represent her country in Tokyo. And as Duplantis continues to compete internationally for Sweden, he says he wants to do all that he can to elevate the sport.
Win everything there is to win. I want to do it more times than anybody else has done it. But if you know pole vault, if you know the history of pole vault, that's really, really big shoes to fill when you're following the likes of Renaud Lavillenie and Sergei Bubka, people that have won many, many global titles. Bubka winning, I think, 6 or 7 more championship titles, and I haven't even won one yet. So I feel like I still have a really long way to go and a lot of things left for me to achieve. And so it's a really good start right now. My journey, but I think there's still a lot for me to go out there and do.
Duplantis is the reigning World Athletics Male Athlete of the Year after being crowned in 2020 as the youngest ever to win the award. And at the start of this year, the pole vaulting star was named Male Athlete of the Year in Sweden. And that is all for me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. And that wraps up the October 26th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the sunny side of sport.